This is episode 329 of the 200 Churches podcast.
The one thing that they all had is that they really had a gospel focus. They really wanted people in Whitehorse to know Jesus. And that, you can't manufacture that. When you have elders that really care about lost people, then change becomes easier.
Welcome to the 200 Churches podcast. We're passionate about providing ministry encouragement to pastors of small churches. We release a brand new episode every Wednesday to do just that for you, all of our small church pastor friends. Now here are two guys who are definitely better together, friends, pastors, and podcast partners, Jeff and Johnny.
This is the 200 Churches podcast. My name is Johnny Craig, and I'm sitting here in the studio. Is it still opulent and luxurious?
It's even more opulent and luxurious. Come on, don't be getting weak when Willie need on me.
I'm sitting here in the opulent and luxurious studio with my friend and podcast partner,
Jeff Cady. Good to see you, Johnny.
Good to see you, Jeff. Jeff, I drove out to Ohio and back in 2 days last weekend, and I listened to a podcast while I was doing it. It was called The Dream, and it blew my mind. It was fantastic.
Really?
But I just thought, it's so different than our podcast, because it's like journalistic, and there's like all this like back and forth, and like they talk to people, and then they do voiceover, and they
little
do
musical
all this stuff.
Clips in between.
Exactly right. And I thought,
oh yeah,
it's awesome. My wife produces a podcast for the Preemptive Love. It's called the Love Anyway podcast. She was on and talked about it once before, and it's like that. It's like that. And it's very journalistic-y and storyteller-y, and it's amazing. And I just thought, thank goodness we don't do that, Jeff.
Well, I wish we could, but then we'd have to go, boop, 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 do, 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 do.
It'd be so much work. It takes so much work to make a podcast
so much work.
Like that. It's crazy.
You know, I was editing Dan Ryland last week for the episode.
Yes.
Let me tell you what. If anybody hears any of our guests live, they're going to be like, what happened to these people? They stutter and they stammer. They got all this verbal clutter.
Not on the podcast.
I do way too much to clean it up, but I can't put it out there unless it's in its best shape. I mean, it's what we said.
Yep.
With just a lot of the pauses and the verbal clutter taken out. And of me too. And
absolutely.
Not just our guests.
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
Of me too. But it's so, and then I listen to it. It's so much easier to listen to when it just moves right along and you don't have all of the stammering.
See, that's the two sides of the spectrum. There's podcasts that are like super produced, so well made, everything timed out to the moment, and like all these clips and music, and it's layered, and I mean, it's all this stuff. And then you get these podcasts and you hear them, Jeff, they don't edit it. It's like they put up the raw audio online.
People are sneezing.
It's terrible. Nobody should sneeze on your podcast. That's embarrassing.
The guy sneezed, and then he said, excuse me. And then he kind of sniffled a little bit. And I don't know if he was using a Kleenex or his fingers.
That's the end of your podcast. Shut it down. Whatever you've been doing before the sneeze, it's over. Like, it was nice knowing you.
This was actually a big-time podcast. Some of our listeners might know who I'm talking about. I don't remember who it was.
I don't care. I don't care how big you are. It's over. We're shutting you down. The sneeze, it's over. It's done. I don't care how big you are. You can be Michael Hyatt.
What if
you're
sneezing,
you're done.
What if I say it was David Fitch?
If it's David, first of all, if it's David, we expect David Fitch to sneeze on air. That sounds like exactly what David Fitch would do. But even that, what's this guy now? Michael Moore or something like that? That guy needs to take care of him.
He does.
Yeah.
He does. And he does.
Yes. It's good.
Hey, our listeners might be interested. The Kingdom Roots podcast with Scott McKnight.
Scott McKnight, yep.
Very recently, they did a two-part that was actually one episode that Scott appeared on Tim Mackey's podcast. And I don't know if it's called the Bible Project podcast, but it's the one Tim Mackey, the guy out at Multnomah, out in Portland area.
Okay.
And he does those, you know, those big picture overviews of a book of the Bible.
Yes.
And if anybody wants to listen to that, Tim Mackey talks Scott through all of the books that Tim has read that Scott wrote.
Wow.
And he basically conversed about each of the books and how those books impacted his life. But then he picked Scott's brain about the thesis of the book and some of the really interesting
stuff. That sounds awesome.
So Scott McKnight, Tim Mackey, and Tim's partner, or two, I think,
were
there as well.
Yeah, he's got some partners. Scott McKnight is a gift to the church. I have a shelf full of Scott McKnight books. I love that guy. So that's worth checking out, Kingdom Roots Podcast with Scott McKnight. But this here, Jeff, we got to stop talking about other people. This here is the 200 Churches Podcast, and you had a conversation with a friend of the show, our brother from a Canadian mother, if I can say that.
I'm not sure if you can say that, Johnny. If I said it, you would tell me that there was something wrong with that.
What? Canadian's fine.
Somehow I would be Archie Bunker or worse.
I'm sticking to my guns. Our brother from a Canadian mother. Come on.
Okay.
Jeremy Norton. Jeremy Norton is a good guy. I was not on the podcast, obviously, because I'm a schlub, but you were on with him. He was on 2 years ago, and he's up in the Yukon Territories. And he's sharing now about some changes that his church has gone through. They changed their name, which sounds like a small deal, but anybody who's ever done it knows that's not a small deal. Your church loves their name. Like, they don't want to change.
Yeah, I said to him, you know, this probably was a very small thing. And he kind of went on to tell me that it really wasn't that small of a thing.
0% chance it was small.
Considering all the other things he's done, because sure. he had been talking about other stuff too that we had been chatting about, and I thought, well, the name change must have been the least of these, but I'm not sure that it was the least.
Name changes are hard. So, you have to really cast a vision for why you are going to change the name of a place, because the people who are there, they fell in love with that church with that name. And when you're going to change the name, you better have a compelling reason. You better have a clear vision for why we're going to change the name. And so I'm really interested to hear that story. It's going to be good stuff.
It is good stuff. Johnny, let's get to the conversation I had with Jeremy Norton. Jeremy Norton, welcome back to the 200 Churches Podcast.
Thank you very much. So fun to be on again.
Yeah, by the way, we just started, Jeremy. You like that? You like how I just moved right into that starting the episode?
Loved it. Loved it. Wouldn't expect anything less.
You know, as you were talking to me earlier, you and Carrie Newhoff have the same Canadian accent. The same thing. It sounded like just a younger, smarter Carrie Newhoff.
Definitely not smarter. What does he have, like 14 degrees or something like that?
Yeah, but he doesn't use 13 of them. And I'm not even sure about the 14.
Yeah. No, he's a super intelligent guy. I've learned a lot from him. From afar.
We love picking on him. We love picking on him. He's very pickable.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks for getting a hold of me and suggesting that we reconnect. I don't know what you suggested, but when I saw the text from you, I said, Jeremy Norton. Let's see. I know that guy. I know a couple Nortons. So I had to think about it. And I thought, yep, I wrote it on my whiteboard. Let's reconnect. It's been 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Reintroduce yourself. Let people know where you're at and what your situation is, and then we'll pick up from 2 years ago. And in the meantime, I'll check and see which number episode it was.
Awesome. My name is Jeremy Norton. I'm the lead pastor, really only pastor, at Mountain View Church, which 2 years ago was White Horse Baptist Church. And
so, it's changed.
Yes. So we've been on a revitalization journey, revitalizing kind of a small town, you know, a small church, and going through a lot of changes to revitalize, a conservative Baptist church, you know, sticking with maybe conservative values and doctrine, but what it looks like to be progressive in practice and in the community and what that looks like. So it's been a fun ride for sure.
So it used to be, what'd you say, White Horse Baptist?
White Horse Baptist Church was the last time we talked, that was the name.
And now it's what?
Mountain View Church.
Mountain View Church. Because you are located where, Jeremy? Remind everyone.
White Horse, Yukon Territory. So we neighbor Alaska. A lot of people know kind of where Alaska is in the map. And we're the Canadian neighbors to Alaska. We're way up here.
Wow. You are way up there. Way, way up there in the North Country.
Yes, sir. Sure.
Remind us of your town. Because as I recall, it's like 30,000 people, but it's, well, the middle of nowhere probably is an understatement.
Yeah. It's nicknamed the Wilderness City. So there's, if you're on the Alaska Highway, lots of people, specifically when they get retired in the lower 48, the bucket list trip to Alaska is on the Alaska Highway. And so they start up their journey and they pass right through our town. Our town, the city of White Horse here, is kind of the only thing like a day or two's drive in either way. And 30,000 people in a territory of only 40,000 people. So 3/4 of our territory's population live within like, I don't know, half an hour where I'm talking to you right now.
And you're talking about the Yukon Territory.
Yes.
Which we don't even want to guess how many square miles that is. It's huge.
Yeah, we talked about it. Isn't it like the same landmass as California? I think we figured out that was like the closest state. So yeah, 40,000 people living in California, if you can imagine that. And then try to imagine that 30,000 lives in LA and only 10,000 lives outside of LA. That would be kind of what it would be like.
So, Jeremy, I'm going to keep saying I want to refresh our memories. Really, I'm refreshing my memory because there's been a lot of episodes. So your episode 233.
Okay.
And this episode will be 329, I believe, is what it's going to be.
Wild.
So almost 100 episodes. And in the last few months, we've not hit every single week, or the number would be even higher. So it's been a lot of weeks. But remind us of your family, how long you've been at that church, and like a thing like where you grew up. Are you Canadian, or did you just grow up in Canada?
No, I'm Canadian. I grew up in Sarnia, Ontario, right across the border from Port Huron, Michigan. So if people know where Detroit is, then I grew up on the Canadian side of the border, about an hour and a half, hour 45 minutes from Detroit. So I grew up in a small city. First year of Bible college, I met my wife, who is Alaskan. She's American. Her name's Nicole.
Are Alaskans Americans?
They would state that they're Alaskan, American second, probably. You know, if you ask someone if you ask an Alaskan, where are you from? Oh, I'm Alaskan. Now, of course, they're American, but Alaskan pride's a big thing for sure. Kind of a wild journey, but for about a decade, Nicole and I felt called to the White Horse Valley, and we had traveled the Alaska Highway, obviously visiting family and stuff, but the Lord didn't open any doors to this church. I actually applied to this church three times over 8 years, and finally the fourth time I applied to this church, I got in as associate. 3 or 4 months later, the lead pastor resigned, and then I went through kind of a year-long process of kind of interim, and then they called me to be a lead pastor. And so that was almost 5 years ago. It's kind of like to fulfill or being able to fulfill or the Lord fulfilling is the call on our heart to be in Whitehorse. It was a long journey, and we have three boys.
How old are those guys?
Oldest, Jude, is 11. Middle one is Luke, and he is 9. And then we have Mark, who is 3.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. And you guys, you've been there for 5 years. You don't feel like you're out in the middle of nowhere. You're happy there. You're fulfilled in that spot.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's called a city, although at 30,000, it's kind of a town, but we just have all major services, and being on the Alaska Highway and being really the oasis on the Alaska Highway.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just, we have everything any major city has, which I think people are always surprised in when they go through. You know, we just added our third Starbucks, for example. So
there's three Starbucks in the Yukon Territory.
Yeah, there. I don't know if there's one in Dawson City or not, but if there is, then there's four. So anyway, yeah. Well, when you get lots of American tourists, you got to have their Starbucks, or maybe coffee preference is a big thing there in where you're from. I don't know. But
is there a Chick-fil-A?
No, there's not. I have never actually had Chick-fil-A, but I hear about it all the time, and so I'm extremely interested to finally have it. I hear it's a big deal.
Well, if you come to Des Moines to visit me and Johnny, we will treat you to all the Chick-fil-A sandwiches your heart could possibly desire.
Awesome. That sounds great.
It's just a short flight. It's just a short flight from Fairbanks or Juneau or wherever your Anchorage, wherever you're going to fly out of, Nome.
Yeah, no, I would have to drive. So the cheapest way to do it would be to drive 14 hours to Anchorage and then get a flight from Anchorage to Des Moines. That would be the cheapest.
So you're only 14 hours from the airport.
Well, the White Horse has an airport, but it's more expensive. This is the crazy part, especially if my family were coming. I think if it was just me, it would be okay. But a lot of times when we go for vacations, like it's cheaper for us as a family of five to drive 14 hours to Anchorage and fly out of Anchorage on Alaska or an American airline. Which seems really backwards, but that's just the journey we have.
No, I get it. I get it. We had a family of six, and we could not fly. You know, we drove everywhere because it just didn't make any sense to fly. Because then you get to the other end, you don't have a vehicle anyway. Mm-hmm. Then you got to rent one.
Yeah, my wife homeschools, so she stays at home. She's not working outside the home, so you get it. You know, you know like when you're on a ministry budget and you still want to do a vacation with the family and stuff, you got to get creative.
Well, especially when you got to use those Canadian dollars, which are like worth like, what are they worth? Like 25 American cents or something like that now?
I think it's down to 66, 67 cents. It's really.
Is it? Seriously? I had no idea. I had no idea what it was.
No, I think it's nearing there now. I think maybe 70 cents.
So back in the 90s, we did a lot of missions trips into different places in Canada. Mm-hmm. And I think it was like, you know, you'd get like $1.52 Canadian for $1 American at the time.
Yeah.
And I know that's changed. I know it came up pretty, there was parity, right? It was pretty much even there for a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a journey being near a border. It's an interesting thing.
Jeremy, you've been there for 5 years. You said you got there as associate, took you like a year. So you've really been in the saddle, what, a little over 3 years maybe?
Yeah, I'd say that. Yeah. Like,
okay.
You know, and you know, when you first become a lead pastor, and I was actually becoming like the only pastor, you know, you got to kind of, I don't know, you got to kind of wait around a little bit and see what happens. Like my mentor always said, wait a year before bringing any major change. Like let people get sure. to know you as the head guy first. And so I took that to heart.
You looked at the church and you decided that things needed to change. Now, we could go back and listen to episode 233. I should have listened to it before I recorded with you, but nobody else would have remembered, so it doesn't make any difference.
You know, we had just started implementing some revitalization strategies. We had just worked through as a leadership team, Lasting Impact by Kerry Newhoff. That was something that we did. 7 Powerful Conversations for Church Growth. And yep. Starting to implement that stuff. So that's kind of... I think we had just started kind of that journey where the church was ready to start changing, I think.
Yeah, and that was going to be my question. Were the people in the church ready to implement change, or did you come in and you started seeing stuff and then you had to convince people that there was actually a need for change?
I had a strong elder team that I actually became good friends with, and our eldership was really amazing. A mix of younger guys and older guys, but the church had gone through a pretty difficult time. As anyone who's listening, like it's tough losing a senior pastor. And there's always some residual trauma in that because there's people that are really close to the pastor. There's some that maybe weren't close to the pastor. And so it was kind of a low point for a while. And I think one of the good things that can happen when a church is at a low point is they're kind of ready for change. And we, as a leadership team, both our kind of ministry leaders, our board, and our pastor elder team, we went through Kerry Newhoff's book, Lasting Impact. It came out in 2015. This would have been 2016. Mm-hmm. 2016 that we did it in 7 Powerful Conversations for Church Growth. And, you know, it wasn't 7 things you have to do or your church will die. He didn't choose to name it that way. You know?
Right, right, right.
It was 7 powerful conversations to help your church grow. So it wasn't even have to's. And so you're just asking big, deep questions. And out of that, that was so important for our church to do as a leadership team. It actually brought about so much gospel-centered change within our leadership team. We actually decided to do the book as a preaching series through the book of Acts, as well as using Kerry's book, and brought the whole congregation through it over a few months. Those conversations, having in small groups, having just in coffee shops, and just the church as a whole having those 7 powerful conversations, I have to state that that helped. We had already cast new vision as a church, the pastor elder team, our new vision to be an authentic, vibrant church serving and reaching our city. So we had a new vision as a church, but those 7 conversations helped that vision materialize. I don't know if that all makes sense. That was a lot of information, but
that makes a lot of sense, Jeremy. And you know, a guy like Kerry is going to write this kind of a book, and he's going to hope that people do exactly what you did. But it's one thing to read a book, and every listener is going to identify with this. It's one thing to read a book and to think about the ideas. It is very, very different to then execute on the things you learn.
Oh yeah,
and put it into practice. So I give not just you credit, but your church leaders credit and your people credit for being willing to engage. So you had some people that God was working in their hearts all at the same time, because this doesn't just happen because one or two people catch a vision for it and talk everybody else into it. These other people, they have to be ripe for change and willing and receptive to some new ideas and have a little bit of vision in order to embrace something like that and actually make it happen.
Like, I can't say enough, you know, the elders that have been at the church the you know, 30, 40 years, you know, I had two elders in their 40s. They were born and raised in this church. And so they, you know, when you get a guy in his 40s that's born and raised in a church, then you get like, they know the good, bad, and ugly, and they know all the stories that no one wants to talk about, and they know the people, they know the church dynamics, especially in an older conservative evangelical church. You know, we're in the Baptist world. Those guys, both the senior guys as well as these guys in their 40s that had kind of been there, the one thing that they all had is that they really had a gospel focus. They really wanted people in Whitehorse to know Jesus. And that you can't manufacture that. When you have elders that really care about lost people, then change becomes easier. And we started praying as a church that God would bring us unsaved people, that unchurched people would start just walking in the door, and that we.
Okay, so you said something, Jeremy. I don't want to lose it. When you have elders who really care about lost people,
absolutely changes everything.
It starts with the caring.
Yeah.
So it's not a business then. It's not a program. It's not a leadership strategy. It's one heart, one person caring about another person, or one group of people caring about another group of people. And I think that is so important. It's a great distinction.
Mm-hmm. And the programs and processes and plans and even looking at policies and stuff, all of that comes, like it has came, and we've had to look at all that. Like on next week, we're voting in our new constitution and bylaws that is all, it's actually trimmed down. We've taken a burden for the lost and a desire to reach our city and that kind of vision to be authentic, to be vibrant, to serve and reach our city. And we've allowed that to transform some of those programs and processes. What does it look like if people who don't know Jesus in Whitehorse, if they become the priority, how does our church function then? It's just super cool. And we've prayed desperately that God would bring us unchurched people and that we would be ready for them. And he has. And so in the past 2 years, you know, our little church has seen 17 salvations, 29 baptisms, 27 new members, which I know for like mega church, those are like, just like, oh yeah, you know, that's no big thing. But for small town Whitehorse, that's revival.
That is awesome.
It's only to do with like fully to do with our pastor elder team got burdened and got serious, and then the Holy Spirit just brought the change. It's just amazing.
Other than Carrie's book, were there any other outside people or groups or organizations or even like remotely connected to you that helped you work through some of this?
Yeah, we have a strong, our kind of denomination is the Fellowship of Evangelical Baptists. So, you know, I like to describe it as, you know, it's a fellowship of churches, Jesus primary, Baptist second, we're Evangelical Baptists, you know, gospel first, Baptist mm-hmm. second a little bit. And yeah. Our fellowship of 500 plus churches across Canada is pretty strong, and specifically our Pacific region. And so they've been really helpful in that. Before we cast new vision, the president of our fellowship actually did, we had an intervention as a church after that real difficult time where we lost a pastor, our lead pastor. And he did a full kind of intervention with us and did a huge like Q&A with our leadership team and everything. And his name is Steve Jones. He's the head of our fellowship region across Canada. And he gave us some tough news. He, you know, he said, your attitude and your morale is really high, but you guys are lost in kind of policy and vision and stuff. And you guys are on, as far as church life cycle, you guys are in retirement, and your church will end up closing its doors if it doesn't get new vision. And so that's what started the vision process. But that was before we chatted last time, so I might have already said that in the last interview we did.
I don't remember. You probably did. I don't remember, but that is tough news. But that was before. So since you and I last talked, has that guy or people from your denomination, have they been assisting you or giving you some coaching?
Yeah. So on the Pacific region, the head of the Pacific, his name is David Harita, and he oversees Fellowship Pacific, Fellowship Evangelical Baptist Pacific region, so British Columbia and Yukon. And yeah, they're always available for help. The head office is in Langley, BC, and whether it be by an email or a call, if I'm like, hey, we got this thing going on, what should we do? And right now, so in this time too, so there's other good stuff. We've actually planted a church downtown in this 2 years, and we're actually
really,
yeah, we've just this Sunday they had 45 in attendance. So a couple came to us and wanted to plant a church right as we were doing this revitalization, and so we jumped on board. And it's called the Northern Collective Church. You should call, his name's Harrison Kwok. He would be a great person to talk to.
Nice.
So we planted a church, helped them plant a church. And so they're a year and a half into their 3 year support journey. And then we've got new land, and we're actually ramping up the capital campaign and the building project. I was just at a capital campaign meeting today, and our fellowship is helping us with a video crew and things like that to start our capital campaign for our new build. But all of this, I can't stress it enough, all of this started with an intervention that we listened to and new vision. And then once we cast a new vision, we had 7 powerful conversations, took it seriously, brought it to the congregation, and through all that, just praying for the lost.
Were you the lead pastor when the intervention happened?
No, I was kind of this interim, for anyone who's been the associate, when a lead guy leaves, then they know what I'm talking about. It's just this odd role.
It is. I've been there a couple times.
Okay, so you're just kind of the guy. You're just kind of the pastor that's kind of left. And everyone's wondering when you're going to leave. People would ask me, like, and Nicole, my wife, they would be like, when are you guys leaving us? we tried for 8 years to get to this church. Are you kidding me?
I referred to it as I was the last guy standing.
Yeah, it feels like that sometimes. Yeah. But there's a joy in it, in that people appreciate you so much that you're just even still there with them. But there's a burden in it because you feel the weight of it. So it's odd. Yeah, for those people who have been the pastor left, it's great though. It's good.
You talk about these 7 conversations, right? And so I'm looking at them right now. I've got the book.
Yep.
It's probably been since it came out that I read it. So I pulled up the table of contents here. Do you remember any of these conversations and one being like very much more significant than the others?
Oh yeah. So there's one question. Are our leaders healthy? ...
Really?
Question.
Yeah.
That was huge. And that was an amazing time for the pastor elder team, where we had to take, you know, this vision casting of being an authentic, and we had to realize, okay, if we want an authentic church, we need to be authentic leaders. And that was an amazing time of us as a pastor elder team. I think that's a moment really when we started to really become good friends too, because we had to really trust each other.
Now, up where you live now, the culture up there, I don't imagine that it's like real, like touchy-feely, you know, let go of your emotions and let people in and talk about how you're, you know, for guys, right?
It's a pretty staunchly independent culture. If you're moving to the Yukon, you know, there's a difference. Like we're like 33% government employees from southern Canada and big cities. So that changes things. But if you're a born and raised Yukoner, you're a sourdough, you're pretty staunchly independent and you can kind of do things on your own. So the idea of a pastor elder team getting real with each other and to be really honest about what's going on in your personal life and in your marriage and how you're feeling, it's not easy.
I would think that. But you're saying that particular conversation actually number 3, that was one that was really made a big difference.
It was important, and we started getting more authentic with the congregation as well. And we started shifting, like the elders started better communicating to the congregation, I think, on my behalf and saying, you know, this isn't a one guy show. You know, we're a pastor elder team and we shepherd this flock together. You know, because sometimes there's an addiction to a pastor that he wants to be the head guy and wants to be the one that calls all the shots until things go bad, and then he doesn't maybe want to be the guy. So
you're right.
It's like, I really like it, but then I don't like it. but then I like it, then I don't. And so that, you know, we're in this together helped.
And I could imagine number four, what keeps high capacity leaders from engaging our mission?
Mm-hmm.
That had to be a little intimidating, a little threatening.
Yeah. And that, it's an amazing chapter because it's the idea that the people that are really on mission and that are really gospel focused, they might have actually been at your church, but they left because you're so in love with your structure and your policies and all your programs. And they're so driven and focused on the mission of the gospel, they actually went to another church. And a lot of high capacity leaders end up leaving smaller churches and going to bigger churches because they actually want to do work. They want to do Jesus' work. And they just, I think for us smaller churches, we can get bogged down in policy very easy. We got to do a better job of that so that we don't lose some of those high capacity volunteers and those high capacity servants.
So you guys changed the name of the church, which is probably the least important change you've made. Tell me about the things you've really done that where you've changed significant things, and not again, not significant like, you know, you got rid of the pews or something, but significant in that the meaning was very deep and that there was a huge impact because of those changes.
The name was a big change. I had to lead through just understanding that the Baptist denomination in our culture, the word Baptist was actually preventing people from walking in the door. Not that we want to hide our doctrinal standpoint, but that flag was no longer attractive to the culture.
Right.
And
I remember that part of our conversation.
Yeah.
I do.
So that was kind of a big one, and that one went okay. But then from there, we started talking about what does Sunday morning look like if unchurched people or de-churched people, because there was lots of Gen Xers and millennials of people in the church who have walked away from the church and said, you know, I grew up in church and there's nothing there for me. So what would it look like if they came back? What would they want church to look like? Or if an unchurched person, things like calling it the sanctuary. Okay, well, what does that mean to an unchurched person? Maybe we need to call it an auditorium. You know, I removed the big oak, you know, the oak pulpit that stands in many Baptist churches and put a stool and a bar table on the...
Oh, my goodness.
You know...
You didn't.
These are little structural changes that are quite popular right now in Progressive Church. These nuanced things, we started doing more video stuff. And, like, these are little things, but we did get feedback from people that for unchurched and de-churched people, it made the experience more comfortable. People actually wrote on cards, you know, your church has taken religion out of the church experience. And the religion and the tradition was actually, for our culture, pushing people away. And they were missing Jesus because of a lot of those things. And again, I'm not dogging anyone who that's maybe working for their culture. But for us in Whitehorse, this was very new to do this. So
sometimes religion gets in the way of our relationship with God.
It was.
Basically.
Yeah, it was. They weren't.
But the Spurgeon Memorial Pulpit.
Ours had a little plaque on it, you know, from someone who had passed away. And so that.
So how many people did you lose? How many people just said, oh, this is too much. We can't do this. We're out of here. Some, any?
So we had some people go to the church plant because they want a smaller church and the church plant is doing a different feel. So I don't know if you can really say we lost them. We were encouraging them to go. I think we maybe lost a few people, but our attendance overall has grown. And some of those people have come back, especially like, so when someone, let's say in their 60s or 70s, all of a sudden sees tons of people that are in their 20s and 30s that remind them of their grandkids, that they want to be in church and are engaged, that's a very hopeful message in their heart. We've grown overall. You know, 2017, we were our average of 120. 2018, an average of about 155. 2019, we're averaging about 185. And some Sundays, we're up over 200. And so now we're working through, speaking of Kerry Newhoff again, we got to work through his stuff on breaking the 200 barrier. And what does that look like? Because we're hitting the 200 ceiling, which anyone who does small churches and even like your episode, you know, your podcast, 200 churches, it's, yeah.
Yeah.
So
now you got to, You got to make it so that 200 isn't a barrier for you, so that you keep going. Because, man, that is huge growth for a church your size in a city your size. That is fast growth right there.
And the thing that's amazing is it's not like there's some people moving in. There's always going to be a bit of transfer growth. But what we wanted is, like, as our pastoral team was praying, we were just like, don't let us just be the church that grows from other churches. That's not what we want to be. I'm a part of the ministerial here. The other pastors are amazing people. I want them to experience growth. And so we have seen. We've seen salvations. We've seen de-churched people come back in the church and be baptized and become members. So we have grown of people who either didn't know Jesus or maybe gave their life to Jesus very early on, but left again because of tradition and religion and or hurt and wounds. Hmm. Who knows all the different reasons people leave church.
Interesting. You know, that transfer growth, that's just going to happen, right? I mean, we can't completely eliminate that. But if that's your market, and if that's your strategy, that's bad.
Yeah,
you know, it's going to happen, and somebody's going to leave your church and bless another church, and somebody will leave another church and bless your church. And I think as we interact with those people, that's important, and we don't want to encourage that. But it's just a reality. And what I've really tried to work on is to actually bless other people, even if they're leaving upset. Somehow bless them so that the next place that they get to, they can actually grow. They don't stay stuck, right? Where they happen to, you know, they leave your church and they're upset. They're just going to take that problem to the next church if they don't ever resolve it.
Totally.
But just try to bless them and help them to resolve that and think the best and be gracious and be happy for. Sometimes you're really happy for that other church that they were blessed by that person, and then other times you wish that you could have kept them. So that's funny, a struggle
in this process planting a church. Like, there is a worry, and so for anyone out there that's thinking maybe they're a smaller church, right? So at that time when we're first getting into it, we're around, like, regular attendance, maybe 120-ish, right? And so we're thinking about going to two services, because we're a smaller building. And then all of a sudden this couple comes along and they want to plant a church. And our elder team, you know, we're like, yeah, we need to help. There is some of this, well, what if they take all our people? And so we had to process it. What if they do?
Yeah.
What if we've grown to two services and we go back down to one because this church plant takes our people? Like, in the grand scheme of things in heaven, you have to, as a pastor, you need to wrestle through with people and say, yeah, okay, what if? Let's talk about that. Is this bad? Transfer to a church plant is very different than transfer to another church. And,
yes,
you know, I think sometimes when we're in a smaller church, it's so hard to see some people go. Like, we've had some good people go over to the plant. And it is a little bit like, oh, man, they were doing this and they were serving in this area and they were doing it. Man, you know, oh, man, I didn't realize how much they did. And, you know, so there's some of that. But you got to just give that to Jesus and know that there's a brand new church, you know. So it's hard, though.
That's awesome.
Hard, though.
So, Jeremy, in the last 2 years, what have been some personal areas that you've had to grow in and that you've been able to, you know, with your team and with the Lord's help? What are some areas that you said, oh, man, I've got to move forward myself in this area?
Oh, so I'm not a patient guy. I'm a doer. I'm a talker. You know, I think even the last episode, Johnny made some comments about me being hopped up on espresso because I talk so much. I struggle with patience. And the one thing I found in this 2 years, there's so many times where I've wanted to act on something or, you know, and then I've been like, nah, and my wife's helped me with that. And, you know, just been like, oh, let's just see what happens. And it is quite fascinating watching over, like, even a week or two. You know, sometimes you say sleep on it, but sometimes it's just like, okay, I'm going to enjoy my weekend here. I'm going to take a couple days off and I'm going to see what happens next week. And yeah, I think a lot of times as pastors, we miss maybe seeing the Holy Spirit do some work and people coming back to the conversation being like, yeah, I was thinking about that on the weekend. Maybe we need to do this and maybe it'll be okay. And I'm like shocked. I'm like, they were so against this. They were so
interesting.
Man, Holy Spirit, you did a really cool thing over the past 5 days. Because I was adamant that I was going to have to go into a fight with them or some big discussion where I need to unpack the theological reasons why this is a good idea. Da, 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 da. And then it's like, no, I thought about it. And I think this is what we need to do. I think you guys are right on this. And I'm like shocked.
Very interesting.
But it's so hard. It doesn't come naturally.
In the last 2 years, what has happened that you wish would not have happened? That was not part of the equation, but it happened and you had to deal with it.
Wow, that is an interesting, what happened that?
Yeah, what happened that was just kind of like a Scud missile, that this was not supposed to be part of the equation as we've been changing and growing and trying to move forward, but it happened, here it is, and you had to deal with it.
Yeah, okay, well, one of them was, is we hired a youth intern, really an amazing guy, and he tried for a year and a half to develop a youth program, and we thought for sure, like, we're a growing church. We're specifically growing in, we were growing in millennials. So like young adults, young marrieds, and so lots of babies are being born obviously. And lots of little kids and young families, but we were really missing people in their 40s that have teenagers so we were missing that demographic. And so missing teenagers, missing. And so we hired a youth director to develop a youth program and kind of do all that. And a year and a half of trying, amazing guy. He's still a part of our church. Like, and he ended up resigning a year and a half later, or a year and 3 or 4 months. Cause it was like, the Lord just didn't bless it. The same three kids that were there were the same three kids that were there. And, and it just, nothing got off the ground. There was nothing was happening. And so we had to defer to, and they were these three kids were connected to the youth group in, at a Baptist church just down the road. And so beforehand, and so we had to just be like, it's okay. You know, you can still attend there. And our youth intern, he resigned, but he said, I still want to stay in Whitehorse. And he actually moved up from, he was in Saskatchewan going to school, but his parents are from the States. So that's it from Minnesota. And so he's up here and now he stays up here. He goes to our church. He says, I still want to be a part of what's going on in the church. So I'm going to stay here, even though I'm not working for the church anymore. And so he's got a job in town and stuff like that. So that was an interesting journey. It was good that the relationship was maintained. It really was just about, we tried something and it didn't go. And we had to kind of admit defeat, which how do you get defeat in one ministry area when the rest of ministry areas are growing? And so now we're looking at...
Well, you're going to feed that, though. Over the years, you're going to feed that, because in 10 years, all those kids are going to be teenagers.
Between the ages of... So grades 5 through 7, we have over 20 kids. So we have like 3 kids in youth, but in like junior youth or like preteen, there's over 20 kids that attend regularly. Never mind their friends in the neighborhoods and stuff that they might reach. So we're actually in the process of probably hiring a junior youth director, and we're going to just have to start a grades 5 through 7 program with the idea that we'll have to get a youth pastor. We tried to attract the age demographic that we're missing. And I think we were a bit off focus there and missed that the Lord was saying, no, you need to focus on the people we've brought to you.
Yeah, exactly. And you said the millennials were coming and they were bringing their kids and they were having kids. So I found that, you know, when I show up at a church 10 years later, everybody's 10 years older. And that's really interesting. And that includes the kids. So that's going to happen at your church. In fact, I'm glad you're already starting it, because you're going to, in 2 years, you're going to really need a youth pastor.
If you're a youth pastor listening to this podcast, give me a call.
Mark it down. Mark it down if you want to spend time in the Yukon territory. And if it doesn't work, you could always get a job in town. There's probably plenty of them, aren't there?
Our city has the lowest unemployment rate in the entire country. We're like less than 0.3%.
Man, you need everybody to keep that thing going with all these people driving through and all of the tourism.
Whitehorse.
You probably have a lot of tourists that come through.
Yeah, Whitehorse is booming for sure. But housing is ridiculous. So like, So to get like a 2-bedroom house, it's around $2,000 to rent a month. Single, like a detached home. Like I looked at one yesterday just in a regular residential neighborhood and they wanted $688 for it. So $688,000 for like just a regular like 3-bedroom detached home with a yard.
But in American dollars, though, that's only like $150,000, though, right?
That's totally true. Yeah, so Americans invest in Canadian real estate while the dollar's good.
HGTV, that, you know, my wife and I watched that, and we're like, who are these young couples in their 20s who are buying homes for $700,000-$900,000?
You know, Jeff, they are just these young couples that, like, yeah, I just feel sorry for them. They have to just be, debt, you know, in debt to the hilt to get a mortgage.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's true. That's true. Perfect. Sometimes it's who are they, but it's where are they as well, because location is a big deal.
So like any place, when there's lots of jobs, usually housing prices go up because there's not enough housing to fit the jobs. That's a worldwide global problem. It happens in every city that faces a bit of a boom.
So Jeremy, what's the next thing? You guys are doing a building. So how many does your current auditorium seat?
So if every seat is filled, 180, but that's like tuna can full, you know, in church dynamics, once it's 80% full, you're kind of full. But yeah, tuna can 180.
Yeah.
You know, 180 is every single seat.
Yeah. So really 140, yeah. 145, 150 tops, and it's really pretty comfortable.
Yeah. And the building was built in 1961. So like there's no, so in the summer it gets pretty hot and unbearable, you know, like, so, because there's no air conditioning, obviously, up here. And so there's some, and then in the winter, people are too cold. And so there are some things of dealing with the old building. You know, the children's space is down in the basement, which, as far as like planning to protect and abuse prevention and stuff, like no parent wants to come in. And it's, and even though we've redesigned the children's space downstairs, there is something, you know, I don't know. Sending the kids to the basement.
No, it's true.
Feel.
No, it's kind of like Miss Trunchbull when she puts the kids in the chokey.
Yeah, so it's a vibrant space with good lighting and climbing walls and different cool stuff, but it's still the church basement. And you know, the upper levels, the adults, the whole auditorium, itty-bitty foyer or a foyer.
Oh, right. Yeah. Narthex.
Yeah, so it's the typical, like your typical A-frame church building. There was thousands of them built in the 60s of the same model.
So how far are you going away? Where's the land? How many miles?
So the land is 5-7 miles away.
Still in town or out of town?
Still in town, in the new residential area. In 2014, a property came up for sale, and you know, like a lot of small evangelical churches, most people don't know that they save money really well. They don't spend it well. So we had enough money to like buy this property cash, which is still shocking to me. And so we have this triangle piece of property in towards just before you hit new residential area that's all being built. And so there's no churches in the area. On one side of the street, it's near a college. But then on the other side, there's a low-income trailer court that's actually right across from it. So there's really some good ministry opportunity there, as well as young families moving into new residential. It's a really amazing spot. Mm-hmm.
And when do you break ground? Do you have any idea? Or are you still just starting that capital campaign?
Yeah, just starting capital campaign. So we've got a videographer coming up next week to help us put together some promotional video stuff, as well as some stuff to go on social media and different stuff, just to try to start raising that capital and hopefully give people both here in Whitehorse and beyond a vision of what it would be like to invest in the Yukon Territory and spreading the gospel here. And these guys will help us tell that story. So it'll be good.
So here's what I want you to think about. Mm-hmm. It's going to take a very different kind of leadership between now and when that building gets finished.
Yeah, so I hear.
Between today and when you get in, right? It's a certain kind of leadership. Mm-hmm. But then once the building is finished and is done, and there you are, you get the keys, you're ready to go, then it's going to take a completely different approach to leadership, because the people will have been fired up about finishing the project for so many years. And now it's like, oh, now the project isn't about, because it's easy. Putting up a building, that's so concrete, no pun intended there, but it's so, you know, tactile and concrete, and it's visible and achievable. But then once it's done, now you're now you got to do what you said earlier. You need people who care about the lost, who don't care about like paying money to pay the thing off or to build it or to, you know, now what do we do with it?
Oh yeah.
And I've been in both those situations, and I was surprised at the difference once the building project was over and the kind of leadership that's required to now refocus the people on the new mission, which is actually saving souls and growing the kingdom and discipling, you know, followers of Jesus. Just a thought.
Yeah, no, no, you're, and I've heard, you know, this is, you know, I haven't experienced it. This is all new for me, but yeah. A lot of wisdom has been given by, you know, pastors that have been through this stuff, you know, saying, hey, just so you know, this is coming. And, you know, speaking to the Fellowship of Evangelical Baptists, our Pacific region helping us in the head office there, you know, saying like for me as the pastor, as I'm preaching or as we talk about the new building, I've had to add in constantly, you know, through their coaching, the new build and the capital project and everything, it is not the end goal. It is a way that we can reach our end goal to reach more people for Jesus in Whitehorse.
That's good.
And so, but that's been constant coaching that I've been getting and that I've had to consistently implement. And so, but it's funny, even when you get in a capital meeting and you start talking about it, there's a strong pull that it becomes the thing and you have
to
keep it in check. Like, no, the gospel's the thing. The building is a means, it's a method, it's a conduit into which we can bring the gospel forward. But it's hard. Even as a pastor, you get sucked in.
Well, I'm glad you're thinking about those things, and you're a sharp guy. You'll figure that out. And I hope that you're there for the long haul and that you can see, you know, that building maxed out and just, you know, lives changed, because you're right, you know, in the trailer park across the street from there and the new residential areas. And, you know, you said, like you talked in our first episode, episode 233, a lot about the people that were moving there, the kind of people that populate Whitehorse, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. The kind of people that populate Whitehorse.
Yeah.
And, you know, these people, they're busy, they're on a mission just in their lives. They're young, they're growing their family. Yeah. And there's not a whole lot of time for religious activities, but there's never not time for a relationship with God.
Yeah.
So that's really important. So, hey, you know our clientele. They're basically people like you, pastors of 200 churches. We've got some pastors of churches over 2,000 and some pastors of churches of 20 and 25 people.
Yeah.
Talk to pastors for a minute. It's 2019. It's almost 2020.
Mm-hmm.
And some of us old dogs, you know, we thought 2020 we'd be flying around in flying saucers and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But talk to the pastors. Give them a parting shot, right? Give them a word of encouragement and inspiration as they're, many of them, struggling in their ministry and trying to keep track of the constant change and the constant upheaval of not just church culture, but culture in general.
You know, you can't do it on your own. And my prayer would be that every pastor gets gospel-focused elders like he's given me, because if your leadership team isn't burdened for the lost, in the same way that so many pastors are, like, that's why they give up like a regular life of like business or trade or whatever to accept the calling to be a pastor, is a lot of times it comes with a burden to reach people for Jesus. And, you know, I don't know if I can say anything to change a leadership's mind, but that just pray fervently that God would give your leadership a burden for the lost. And that your leadership would start praying that unchurched people, unsaved people, that completely lost and burdened people would start walking in on Sunday morning. Because when that starts happening, at first it's odd for regular churchgoers, but when that starts happening, even for a little church, it's invigorating. Like, your people are like, oh, who's this person? Why did you come in here? Well, I'm looking for answers, and I kind of want to know about Jesus, and I heard this is a place I can find out about him. And when that starts happening with people, it's it's amazing. You just got to ask, like, desperately ask the Holy Spirit to bring a burden for the lost and to bring the lost into your church, and just make it like every day, desperately ask him to bring them in. It changes everything.
I love it. That was challenging to me, Jeremy. And then my mind was saying that if God brings them in, then be as desperate to want to be ready.
Yeah.
Right. To minister to them when they come through the door.
Your regular attenders and members, that well-seasoned people, like, once they start meeting these people, like, they rise to the occasion. It's like they've been hearing all the time. Like, it's like 20 years of hearing, oh yeah, I need to be ready to share the gospel with someone, or, oh, I need to be ready to interact with someone. But now they're doing it in their church, and it almost is easier for them to share the gospel in the church building than it is in their workplace. And if you've got a church congregation that they're not going to share the gospel in their workplace, they're just not doing it, then ask the Holy Spirit to bring the lost people into your church. For some reason, they're more empowered. And I don't get that. I don't fully understand it. I've just witnessed it.
Jeremy, the only way this could have been better is if Johnny was here. But
yeah.
I think we figured it out.
Well, I'm just really, I just want to thank, you know, you and Johnny for doing what you do. Your podcast, you know, continues to be a blessing to lots of guys living in rural areas or urban areas that are kind of helping small churches survive and thrive. And so I'm just really thankful for you guys. And I don't know, just wanted to make sure I said that before I left.
Well, as always, it's our pleasure. It really is. And guys like you who help us to populate the fodder, as I like to say, of this podcast with encouragement for pastors of ordinary sized churches are the ones that really make this happen. So
yeah,
I appreciate it. Cool. Until the next time. God bless you.
Right on. Peace.
You know, Jeremy's got the personality of the Yukon Territory. I just picture him out there rustling through the woods, chopping trees down,
yes,
slinging bears left and right,
yes,
grabbing salmon right out of the stream, ripping it in half and holding it over the fire with his bare hands.
That is...
This guy's an animal.
That is like a Yukon. Like, you say the Yukon, and that's the person that I think of immediately.
I perused his Facebook profile,
yeah,
and all of his photos. I mean, he's Yukon through and through.
That's fantastic.
I mean, almost everything is outside. Almost everything, he's got frost on his eyelids.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, it's just, that's just him.
Speaking as a man with no calluses on his hands, I can say I'm envious of a guy like Jeremy Norton. That's a real dude out there.
And that's, you know, that's the culture there. I mean, that's just...
For sure.
The culture is outdoors. The culture is rough and tumble.
Yes.
You know, as he said, you know, it's not like... a lot of the guys in Whitehorse are worried about their skincare or worried about sharing their feelings with others. You know, they're pretty rough and tumble.
You can still share. Sharing your feelings is an important part of emotional health. Doesn't matter if you're a lumberjack. You still need to share your feelings. Come on.
And he talks about that. And I was saying that, you know, it's probably wasn't that easy for some of the guys.
No, probably not.
It's probably not just the guys. It's the culture of the town.
I'm sure it is.
You know, it's the culture of the area.
You're tough.
Just a little different than Des Moines, Iowa.
Definitely different. except in the winter. Then it's literally exactly the same as Des Moines, Iowa.
That's true. That's true.
That's true. Jeff, tell me right now, are you reading anything important to your ministry?
Right now, I'm not.
That's good. Take a break, man.
I'm actually... Not. I've been reading through, I believe it's Zondervan's exegetical commentary on the New Testament, Gospel of Mark.
Yes.
And that was one of the editors of the series was Mark Strauss, who we had on the podcast
our buddy
weeks ago.
Mm-hmm. Mark Strauss. Good dude. Yeah.
Yeah. So I've got a Sunday night group and we're going through the Gospel of Mark, and I've been enjoying that. Also working through Hebrews on Sunday mornings. I've been really, really enjoying that. But I'm getting ready for a one-week missions trip. I'm getting ready for vacation. We're trying to hire another staff member.
Yeah.
And basically, I'm just kind of going crazy in life with too many things and too many good opportunities in front of me. And I just haven't been cracking the books in probably the last 2 to 3 months. Not a lot.
Can I say, I don't think there's anything wrong with that, Jeff. We've got too much of a...
I hope not.
We've got too much of a CEO culture among senior pastors. And it's, you got to read the books, okay? You got to read the leadership books. You got to read the ministry books. You know, you got to know what Carrie Newhoff's talking about on the blog and all that. But at the same time, We're pastors, dude. We're not CEOs. There's men and women listening right now who are pastors of churches. And you know what? It's good to spend some time in the exegetical commentary on Mark. That's not a bad thing. That's a cool place to be. And you'll read the books. You'll do the work. You're with the Unstuck group. I mean, that stuff is great. But you got to slow down sometimes and remember why you got into this in the first place. It wasn't to lead a Fortune 500 company, right? It was to lead God's people. And so, good for you. I'm glad you admitted that. Not like it's a bad thing, but that we could, you know, talk about that, because I think there's too much pressure on pastors to be CEOs. We women and men who are leading churches need to remember why they got into it in the first place.
Well, and when you can't hardly keep your nose above the water level,
yeah,
you somehow you've got to let go of some of the things you're hanging on to.
Absolutely.
You know, so you could be a little more buoyant. You know, and you can get a breath once in a while.
Yeah, for sure, man.
Yeah, that's kind of what I've been doing. You know, if I don't have to do it, I'm not doing it.
I'm kind of
doing the things that I have to do, because there's plenty of those things right now. While I wait on the arrival of two more grandchildren.
Oh, my goodness. So, two more.
Yes, yes. And in just a couple of weeks, I get to see the two that I hardly ever get to see.
Nice.
And I get to see them for over a week.
That's awesome.
In fact, it's like 10 days I'm going to be hanging out with them for 10 days.
That's great, man.
Very excited. Very excited about that.
Well, I'm happy for you. And, you know, while you're only doing those things that you have to do, or see, Andy Stanley has a nicer way of saying it, do only the things that... only you can do. We'll say it that way. Do you sound
only
more like a leader?
Do what only you can do.
But
yeah.
You actually allow other people to do the ministry. And that right there is, I'm talking about Mark Strauss. He talked about in the episode we did with him about leading like Jesus. He talked about that. Our ministry is equipping the saints for the work, not doing it ourselves.
Yes.
And so
right.
I think, hey, you're leading by example out there, which is fantastic, Jeff.
I had a great lunch today with a guy who lives in Newton, works in Des Moines.
Yeah.
And I talked to him yesterday, and he said, oh, yeah, I'm flexible. I can meet you for lunch tomorrow. We sit down at the Hy-Vee grocery store restaurant here in town. And I said, so you're working from home today? He says, no, I was at the office. I said, in Des Moines? He's like, yeah, I just came back. I'm like, for lunch? He goes, yeah. So I'm thinking, okay, he came back early, and he's going to be in Newton for the afternoon.
He's going to go back?
We get done an hour and 40 minutes later, and he's like, yep, going to head back. I said, you're not going back to Des Moines? Yeah, oh yeah, I'll head back to Des Moines on his motorcycle.
What? That's crazy.
He hopped on his motorcycle, and he comes out just for the lunch meeting with me. But this guy and his wife, within the last year, so they've been around for about a year at our church, and they're just thrilled and excited about what's going on. And he's involved leading one of our new ministry teams. And it's just awesome. And so basically, yeah, I spent that hour and 45 minutes handing whatever I could into his life, you know, to help him in what he's doing. He's a leader where he works, and he's using that leadership gift in the church. And he told me about his family. He told me about how his marriage got better when his wife dragged him to church right after they got married.
Oh, wow.
Maybe, I don't know, a dozen years ago. And he told me how their lives have changed.
That's awesome.
And I told him, guys like me live for that. And pastors, you who are listening, you know that. You know that we live, pastors live for life change.
Absolutely.
When you see a family get healed and come back together in relationships and just the whole family coming back to one another and to God. Oh my goodness, we've got several families like that in our church right now. And if it weren't for that, you'd ask yourself, what on earth are you doing?
Absolutely.
You know, what are you doing? You're just cranking out messages, cranking out meetings, cranking out whatever.
Mm.
No, you got to see the Holy Spirit cranking out changed lives. And that's the oxygen that you breathe when the going gets tough. So if you've got families or individuals in your church whose lives are changing, congratulations. I'm happy for you, because I know that's what we live for.
Hey, man, I can't say it any better, and I can't think of a better way to wrap this thing up than that. So thank you to Jeremy Norton for joining us all the way from the Yukon territories. Thank you, Jeff, for running another episode when your lazy, no good co-host is being a bum. And thank you, our listeners, for hanging out here. on the 200 Churches podcast.
My name is Angela, and I want to thank you for listening to this episode. If you haven't already, you should subscribe to our weekly email at 200churches.com and to the podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. You know it. We'll be back next week with another amazing and encouraging episode just for you. Until then, may God bless you as you lead and love His church.
Amen. Right on, brother.
Amen. Thanks, Jeremy. Someday we'll meet each other.
Anytime. You and your wife, if you ever get a chance to do the bucket list Alaska highway journey. And yes. Maybe if I'm ever in, you're in Des Moines?
I'm in Des Moines. You're just outside of Des Moines. Johnny's right in Des Moines.
And so, yeah, Des Moines, Iowa?
Yeah, Des Moines, Iowa. Yeah, hey, first in the nation, Iowa caucuses, baby. All of the candidates come through Des Moines, every last one of them, many times.
Cool.
Yeah, and you know what? It's kind of boring, to be honest with you. It's like we drive around the campaign buses, and we're like, oh man, these people are in the way. We got to get through here. And they got the rubberneckers and the gawkers and everything. But when you live in Iowa for so many years, it's just like, oh yeah, it must be election time again. And yeah, it's kind of crazy. We don't put our hope in people or electoral processes. We put our hope in the Lord.
Yeah.
And the kingdom is the reality that we live in. So whoever gets elected is whoever gets elected.
Yeah.
We'll pray for them, show respect to them, but our trust is in the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth. Amen.
Absolutely.
That's my position, and I'm not going to change it.
Yeah. Well, it's a good
All right.
to be in.
Okay, buddy.
Later, man.
We'll talk to you soon. Bye. All right. Bye-bye.